Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the broadcast with Amanda, Shandy, and Colleen. My name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I have a mouthful of chips.
And welcome to the show, everybody. This is episode 2.9, I think number 54. I have still sadly lost my notebook, so I'm still flying a little blind here. But we have a special episode in store for you guys today. We just spoke with the super awesome Trina Robbins and had a great conversation. And we decided that we wanted to get the episode out sooner rather than later. So we were going to just make this episode all about our Trina interview.
Because it's awesome.
Because it's great.
It's really fun. So you don't have to.
And it should stand on its own.
We can
get to Facey back next week.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Or in a few days when this comes out. Because I think this is just going to be part one of part two for this week. We haven't really figured that out. So just stay tuned. But anyway, so we just wanted to, like Amanda said, let this stand on its own. You do not have to know anything about comics to listen to this.
We sure didn't.
I love when she name dropped Bill Sienkiewicz or whatever at the end. And she's like, I'm sure you guys have heard of him.
But I'm going to go do my homework now after class.
I think that he was behind Elektra or something like that. Because I had recognized the name, but I just thought that was funny. So anyway, that's just one example. She just tells a lot of really great stories about all of the pretty kick-ass, badass things that she has done.
So amazing. What a life. God.
So without further ado, I think we're going to just get right into it. I hope you guys enjoy it as much as we do. And stay tuned for the next episode to come out with. It'll be out in less than a week. I can guarantee that. So stay tuned. All right. Thanks, guys. All right. So we are now joined by the inspirational, amazing Trina Robbins. Welcome, Trina, to the broadcast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
For anybody out there who doesn't know, I met Trina at a book signing for her book at San Diego Comic-Con this year, and she was fascinating to talk with, and I thought everybody else out here would like to talk to her as well. You have quite the impressive Wikipedia page. Or just Google search results.
Don't believe everything you read. Hey, do not believe everything you read on Wikipedia. Really, really take it with a grain of salt. I've taught classes, and I tell people when they do research, do not bother with Wikipedia.
Well, I did. I went to the first two pages of my Google search results, so I'm hoping somewhere in there is the truth.
Oh, yes.
Although I'm curious, what is your do you know what are some of the fake things that you've read about yourself on Wikipedia?
I have had to correct them. I am always having to correct them. I think currently they're okay. I haven't looked at it recently, but I check it every now and then and make corrections.
That's amazing.
So would you say that you've been referred to as the very first female underground comic artist? True or false?
No. See, immediately, no. No, in 1966, someone showed me my first, it wasn't my first underground newspaper, but it was the underground, because I was living in L.A. and we had an underground newspaper called the L.A. Free Press. But someone showed me a copy of the East Village Other. And in the East Village Other was a comic called Gentle's Trip Out, and it was signed Panzeca. And 2 years later, I found out that Panzeca was a woman. And that was my first inspiration to draw comics. So, Panzeca was the first underground cartoonist.
Wow. Nice.
Does that make you the second then?
Second.
All right, we'll take it.
Quick, someone check Wikipedia. Make sure it's right.
Yeah, somebody go correct it. Before I forget, a happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Did you have a good birthday?
Yeah, we spent it in Hawaii, which is a nice, painless way to grow older.
I'd say so.
I don't think we need to check Wikipedia to know that one's true. Well, awesome. I'm very glad. So for the uninitiated out there again, and please correct me if any of this stuff is wrong. Just some notes that I had. Let's see. So you're obviously an artist and an author of such books like Women and the Comics, Pretty in Ink, The Great Women Superheroes, and Babes in Arms, which is the book that we are going to auction, or I'm sorry, do a giveaway on this show for that Trina signed.
Lovely. It's brand new.
It is. And it's autographed. You've also been working on the comic book adventures of Honey West.
I was. That's a couple of years old by now.
Okay.
But I really enjoyed doing it when I was doing it.
Can you tell us about that? Because that sounded fascinating to me.
Honey West, as played by the beautiful Anne Francis, who was just perfect in the role. Honey West was the first female private eye on television. She was originally, in the late 1950s, she was a detective series, books. And she was, well, I can't call her the first female detective in books, because Nancy Drew, you know, predates her for quite a bit. But she was certainly an early female detective, and she was much tougher than Nancy Drew, who, after all, was only 16, and Honey was a grown woman, and it was kind of sexy, but not. She never slept with anybody. She got her blouse ripped a lot, but she never slept with anybody. So it was sexy by 1950s standards, if you know what I mean.
That a girl.
That's awesome.
And the TV series was wonderful. Wonderful.
I'll have to check that out and see. Is that available for streaming anywhere?
Oh, God, I'm sure you can find it on YouTube. You can find everything on YouTube.
But true.
I just so absolutely enjoyed writing the Honey West comic, especially because it takes place. The Honey West TV series was the middle 60s. 65 and 66. So what I did was, the whole thing was retro. My Honey West stories all take place in those years, the middle 60s. And that was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's so cool. Must have been like a little trip back in time for you.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of research.
You can definitely find it on YouTube, because I just looked that up.
We'll have to put a link in the comments for people to check it out, because I know I want to.
Yes, I will.
As soon as we're
done,
I'm going to check it out.
I will definitely post a link in the show notes, so you can go check that.
So
let me just make a note.
Okay. This is Shandy, and I had a question for you. I talked to one of my friends who is an art teacher, and she had some questions, and then she also was talking to her class. She's a middle school art teacher, and some of her students had some questions for you. And the first one was just, what kind of inspired you to become a comic artist? I know you talked about this a little bit, but, could you tell us, like, sort of more broadly, what got you into this field in the first place?
Well, you know, I always drew. I mean, I don't remember a time when I wasn't drawing. And then, my mother, who was a second grade school teacher, taught me to read when I was 4. And of course, along with reading comes writing. So I was reading everything I could get hold of, and I was writing. I was immediately writing stories. And of course, you know, words and pictures, that's comics.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And so my friend's students were also wondering, just like in terms of a time frame, how long does it take you to complete a piece? And I guess this could be obviously looked at as, what is a piece? Are you talking about a drawing? Are you talking about a whole book? But how long do some of these different things take you to do?
Well, it really depends on how much. You know, if I'm doing an entire comic book, obviously that's going to take me much longer than if I'm just doing a drawing, or even if I'm just doing one page. As for a drawing, I mean, that's when I'm on the phone, I can complete, you know, any number of drawings when I'm just talking on the phone.
She's already got like 3 done in the last 10 minutes.
Hey, that's when I do my best doodling, is when we're podcasting, guys.
The only thing I can doodle
shoes.
Is a flower.
I like to draw shoes.
Ooh, I like to wear shoes. Actually, I don't like to wear shoes. And that actually came up today at work, which everyone looked at me really weird, but I met my coworker for the first time, and she was barefoot in the office when I walked in, and that was my first thought was, oh my God, these people are my spirit animals, because I also take my shoes off. I don't need an excuse to take them off anywhere. Like, I took my kid to the sandbox the other day. My shoes were off before his. Like, I'm out. I'm done. Anyway, sorry. Shoes, great. Or not. Anyway.
Shoes optional.
Sorry. Shandy was talking about things that actually matter, and I'm bright red right now, and they can see that. And I'm the only not red on this podcast.
It's just the reflection of that wonderful pink shirt you're wearing. That's all it is.
I think, no, shoes are interesting, though, because, like, they're so, you know, they're based on, obviously, the form of our feet. And so there's something very sort of sensual and organic about shoes. And then all the embellishments that we can possibly add to them. Shoes are definitely,
They're little three-dimensional, not so little, I mean, depending on the size of the foot. They're three-dimensional designs, really. They're designed in three dimension.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen some shoes that I could never wear without being in intense pain, and life's too short for intense pain. But they're so beautiful that you just think, well, why don't I just put them on a little pedestal as an objet d'art, you know?
Yeah,
I love that.
That's there French for art object, by the way.
Yeah.
Amanda got it. She was laughing.
Good.
Shandy is actually a French speaker and teacher, so I just love the idea of shoes true. That you wear and shoes that you draw. Exactly. And I feel like there should be a difference. I love that. Although, Trina, I have a question that I'm sort of dying to ask. We were talking about it a little bit. So you were the first woman to draw Wonder Woman. Is that correct?
No.
No. Oh,
but that wasn't even on Wikipedia.
Is wrong.
I know. We found that from two sources.
I found that from Salon.com.
The internet is terrible.
Ramona Freighton drew Wonder Woman for Wonder Friends, Super Friends, I'm sorry. The Super Friends comic book in 1970. But I was the first woman to draw Wonder Woman for an entire Wonder Woman comic book.
Ah, okay.
There. So can you talk a little bit about that? And also, have you seen the new Wonder Woman movie? And what do you think about
it? Oh, God, yes. Are you kidding? I've seen it twice, and I may eventually see it a third time. The second time, it was in 3D.
Oh, awesome.
Ooh, how was it in 3D?
Great. Wonderful.
So what is that like? Something that, you know, was that you worked on that was part of your career, and then to see this new iteration, this new adaptation again done by women. How was that for you?
It was excellent. I had the good fortune to be invited to the premiere by DC Comics.
Good, as you should have been.
Which was in Hollywood. It was in Hollywood at the Pantages, and they roped off the whole street. It was marvelous. It was it's probably the most glamorous moment of my life. Man. And believe me, as soon as I found I was invited, my next thought was, oh my God, what am I going to wear?
Some of those shoes.
Yeah, what about the shoes?
The shoes. Actually, I wore, because it's hot there, or it's, at least it's nice and warm there, I wore very simple patent leather sandals, because even though I think high heels are fantastic, I can't wear them. So patent leather sandals it was. But anyway, the audience, the entire audience was so excited. You know, it was fantastic. And as the screen lit up, you know, for the start of the movie, one woman in the audience shouted, I've been waiting for this all my life.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so were we all.
Did you cry during the fight scenes especially at the end? Because I totally did.
People cried. I didn't cry the first time. Maybe I was just too hyped up.
Yeah.
But the second time when I saw it in 3D, I cried. Yes. Yeah.
It was very emotional.
I have a question that we talked a little bit about on previous episodes. I would be really curious to hear your opinion on these all-women screenings that happened in certain parts of the country, and just what your take was on that, because some people were really celebrated them and some people were upset by them, and I'd just love to know what your thoughts are.
Well, I thought it was lovely, and how lovely of the theater to do this. But of course, you're always going to have the trolls, you know, who really, you know, I mean, they just really resent. I mean, it's been their world, their little yes. comics world. And they think that we're taking it away from them. They don't understand it. Their mothers never taught them to share.
They've never had to. So they should just shut up and say.
But, you know, it's to me. There's a real similarity. I'm going to get political. I hope I can get political here.
Oh, please do. We would love it if you would.
Here, you want me to start? I'll start. Fuck Donald Trump. Okay.
Good. Okay, great.
We set the bar.
There's a real similarity to me. You know, not obviously the comic trolls are not as horrendous, but a similarity with the angry white men. You know,
yes.
who think that their world is being taken away from them because now it's been opened up, yeah. you know, to women and to other races, to races of color, and, you know, and to other genders and other sexual preferences. And the heterosexual angry white guys are so angry. You know, they've been having demonstrations. Of course, you know that all over. Mm-hmm. And they came to San Francisco, and it was, you know, it was kind of a disaster in Berkeley where those awful anarchists come to demonstrations just to make trouble, and they're just as awful on the left as I think those people are on the right. But in San Francisco, it was beautiful. We had a demonstration in the Castro, which is where I live, and it was just jammed full of people, and the feeling was love, you know? But anyway, it's the same. I feel the comics guys, that's the same feeling, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, if they were a Donald Trump of comics, they would vote for him.
Yeah.
I know. There was an excellent article actually on the Washington Post today that talked about just the why are white men so angry? It was a good read, I guess.
Yeah. I just, like, I can't get over these men who are screaming discrimination because of this when it's like,
right, we will not
bro,
be
like, hey, bro, yeah, you guys have been discriminating, like straight up discriminating for, you know, hundreds of years. Like, how is it that now you're going to use that? If you really believe in fighting discrimination, then, like, you know, there are other groups that need actual protection and not so much the straight white man.
Right.
My favorite thing is when somebody starts an argument like, well, I'm not sexist or I'm not a racist, but.
I'm not sexist, but.
I know,
but.
Like, if you have to have that disqualifier.
If there's a but at the end of that sentence, then you kind of are. Should be, I'm not a racist, period.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And let's end it there. Right. Yes, yeah.
There.
Oh, that's so amazing, though, that experience in L.A. That must have been just so powerful.
Oh, my God. Like I say, most glamorous moment of my life. And afterwards, we got to go to the after party.
Ugh.
And, of course, she was there. Gal Gadot was there in a beautiful, in an absolute column of a red sequined gown. Just magnificent. I couldn't get close to her. She was totally surrounded.
Yeah.
But I could look at her.
Well, and to continue on the shoe trend, I had been reading a few things that she's worn flat the
yes.
entire press tour for Wonder Woman. So
love
she was
it.
Probably
oh,
wearing
Christ,
a very sensible shoe.
Yeah.
Oh, what I wouldn't give for that height. Or just to be her for like 5 minutes.
So do we need to talk about James Cameron and his, you know, have a seat moment?
Oh, we could.
What are we talking about? Hello?
Oh, hello? James Cameron yes. and oh, how he needs
I
to have a
seat. I think it cut out for a second there.
Oh, sorry. Did you guys
okay,
hear me?
What is the have a seat moment? What?
James Cameron talking about yes? Criticizing Wonder Woman and how he feels it sets
oh,
the... Yes.
That's right. He didn't like it.
Well, he just thought that his version of feminism was better, I think, was the argument he might have been trying to make.
It's just so terrible that, you know, I mean, obviously no one will go to see
yeah.
the movie because James Cameron didn't like it.
Right, right. I don't know how the sequel will break box office records now.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
I know, I can't wait. I'm excited.
And all those ladies are getting an even bigger payday. It's going to be so good.
Oh, yes. I mean, we know that she was not paid enough for Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, she still did okay. She in the industry, yeah. Like, because I think she got a really good deal with, like, the distribution and stuff. So it was a bit more than I think the major headlines were letting on.
I wouldn't want her to have to go without shoes.
Right. And the most comfortable and the most sensible.
Yes.
Yes. Switching gears for a minute. Your Wikipedia page talks about your involvement in the music scene. I won't even bring that up. I won't bring that specifics up because I don't want to be wrong. But
we should make a game out of it.
They're right. They're right. I used to live in L.A. in the early 60s, the first half of the 60s. I lived in L.A. and I was part of the whole rock and roll Sunset Strip music scene, and I made clothes for rock stars.
That's pretty cool.
Wow. Who were some of your favorite stars that you dressed?
Well, I made dresses for Cass Elliot because she couldn't find anything nice in her size. And I made shirts for David Crosby and Donovan. And I made a lot of clothes for the wives of the rock stars.
That's nice. Very
you know, my memoir is out. Actually, it's officially out in September, but that's like, you know, a week. It's called Last Girl Standing, and right on the cover is a photo from 1965 of me and a whole bunch of women and my ex-husband and Donovan in the middle of the photo, and they're all wearing clothes made by me, except including me and my ex-husband, except for Donovan, who's sitting in the middle.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I'm so excited to check out your book. I feel like the music scene, and I just, yeah, I'm so excited for it. Do you still make clothes?
I haven't made anything from scratch for quite a few years now, mostly because I'm also, I collect vintage clothes. I love vintage clothes. And I'm also the San Francisco queen of thrift shops. So mostly what I use my sewing machine now for is either adjusting things to fit me, you know, because it's hard, especially if it's vintage, you know, it doesn't always fit right. And taking up hems because, speaking of height, I'm very short. And so everything I buy, new or old, has to get the hems taken up, even T-shirts. I have to take T-shirts up 3 inches or I look like I'm wearing a mini dress.
Yep. Oh, preaching to the choir, preaching to the choir. I actually just dropped off a vintage dress at the dry cleaners to get it taken in last week because I do not have my own sewing machine, but I wish I did because that would save me a lot of money.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is awesome. You have to tell us, though, a cool story from that period in time, though.
Gosh, you really need to read. You just need to read the book. I'll just be repeating that.
Give us a teaser.
Yes.
Yeah,
<for sure>.
Give us a teaser. So, all right, I guess.
Say that again?
I said give us a teaser.
A teaser. Well, I started with a strange acid trip taken in 1966, during which time my then boyfriend and I, both of us on acid, were wandering through the Lower East Side, and it just got weird. And just about then, yes, it got understatement. Just about then, we ran into the East Village other offices. There was East Village other offices. I've mentioned that already, the underground newspaper. And so we went in, and the editor, Alan Katzman, was there. Nobody else was there, just Alan. And we just kind of plunked down on the threadbare sofa, and I said, boy, we're having a bad trip. And he just started talking, and he was kind of like comforting us. He was talking about how he and the other editor, Walter Bowart, how they'd gone to to give a talk at Sarah Lawrence, and they were both on acid at the time, and just stuff like that that made us feel a little better, you know. And as I watched him, and as he was talking, and as he was being so comforting, he slowly turned into a rabbi in front of my eyes. I was already bearded, so the beard got kind of longer and darker, and all of a sudden he had a yarmulke on his head, and he was a rabbi talking to me. And of course it made me feel much better and comforted, you know, to see Alan Katzman turn into a rabbi. So that's how I start the book.
All right.
Well, that's a pretty good tease. I think the book is now already in my cart, ready to purchase. That was a great tease.
I just sent you ladies the link to order it on Amazon, and I will put the link to that in the show notes as well.
If you can see the cover, you can see the kind of clothes I made in those days.
Awesome.
I really like the dress that you're wearing.
Oh, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
That is awesome.
But look at my hair. Oh, my God. My bangs are down to my nose. So, how did I even see?
Are you a redhead as well?
No, I have. My hair is, well, of course, it's white. But, I mean, when it wasn't white, it was a kind of a dark blonde that had reddish highlights. And if the sun shone on it, it looked redder.
Okay, because Amanda and Shandy are both redheads, and I'm not. So I always joke that I'm outnumbered. It's kind of like that white male fragility thing, except it's, you know,
brunette. Yeah.
I feel very outnumbered all the time by them and their opinions. No, I'm just kidding, but.
It's on my Facebook page. The cover, Last Girl Standing, is on my Facebook page, in case you want to see it.
Okay.
Unless you've already, probably downloaded it.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. It's a great picture.
It is. I really like that dress. It's really cute. Okay, so sorry to, as we're all staring at the picture.
So I am, you just a couple of yourself too.
Shandy, you're breaking up, dear. A bit.
Yes, you're breaking up.
Well, Shandy is. There you go.
Ah, there you are. Welcome back. Or maybe not.
Maybe not.
And I'm still here.
I think my internet connection is being crap.
Okay. There you go.
No, it's been like coming and going for me a little bit. So, okay. I was just going to say, I'm just a couple hours south of you down in Monterey, actually.
Oh, golly. We're neighbors.
Yes. Pretty
much. Thought you were in New York. Why did I think you were in New York?
Amanda's in New York.
Yeah, I'm in New York. Yeah. Yeah, so hearing you talk about the Lower East Side and the East Village, I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Good time.
Rings a chord. I can, picture it in my mind.
Ooh, so switching into the back into the feminism stuff, true or false, you were in the film She's Beautiful When She's Angry, which is
I'm in that
wave of feminism. Okay, good. I have a fact that's true.
Yes, a fact that's true. That's right.
All right. but you're very, obviously very active as a feminist. And I think the three of us also consider ourselves feminist beyond just the dictionary definition of the word feminist. So Shandy was in the San Francisco March. Which march did you go to, Shandy?
Yeah, I went to the one in San Francisco.
Okay, that's what I thought. And then was in D.C.
My partner went to the San Francisco March. Apparently it was raining on everyone, but they had a great time anyway. I was in Washington, D.C.
Oh, wonderful.
Nice. So was I.
Glorious.
It really was. I was there. Friends and I, a friend of mine is working on a documentary sort of inspired by... you know, the Trump election and the whole, you know, grab her by the you-know-what thing. Yeah. So she wanted to do a film sort of about her experience with sexual assault and sort of how it relates to all that. So she wanted to go to the march to get some footage. And I needed so very little convincing to go along and produce for it. It was a day I won't soon forget. Yeah.
Were you wearing the pink pussy hat? I was.
I got one. One of our listeners had knit me one and mailed it to me, and it arrived the day after I left. So I know. I wear it around the house sometimes.
I wear mine too around the house.
I loved all the variations on the pussy hats.
Me too.
People were even in complete pink pussycat costumes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes, I loved them.
Awesome.
That must have been really
I just love that awesome. It was like, it was a nice warm day too, so people really could kind
of. Oh my God, the weather was fantastic.
It really was.
I was ready to be frozen, but it was great.
I know. I was actually taking off layers because I overdressed because I was afraid of the same thing that I was going to be frozen and I had to peel off layers and yeah, but it was an amazing day. It was really cool. I didn't think I'd ever get to see, you know, Gloria Steinem speak in person. So that was pretty cool.
We didn't get to see her because we couldn't get anywhere near the screen. You just couldn't. You
right.
went a certain point and you got to a certain point and you couldn't budge. You just couldn't move. But everyone was so good-natured about it.
Right. There was a little bit of grumpiness where we were because we were pretty, not super close up, but we were close enough that we could at least see screens because we got there dreadfully early. But I think all in all, yeah, it was really moving to be around that many people and that many people being kind to each other.
Yes. People being kind to each other. It was just, I mean, I felt like, you know, I mean, which is what it's all about. We were all sisters.
Yes.
I mean, that's about sisterhood.
Very much. Very much so.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I'm so happy.
I want to hear more about your feminism stories from, I don't know, throughout. Can you tease us with one that's in the book? Or just give us one.
Feminism story.
Or activism story of some sort.
Well, and even just, you know, coming up in an industry that was very male dominated.
Oh my God.
You know,
it is what sort
of, you know, like what sort
no
of challenges?
Well, you know, in the beginning, in the underground, I mean, there were so few of us in the beginning when I was living in New York, and it somehow I just didn't even notice that they were all guys except me. I mean, it just, I didn't even think about it. But then I got to San Francisco in 1970, well, actually December 1969. I got to San Francisco, and that was when I realized that it, not only was it all guys, but they had a boys' club, you know, and I was not invited into their boys' club. I mean, that was the first time that I saw that and realized it. And I had to do something. I mean, luckily, you know, it was only the guys who would not invite me to their gatherings and their parties and their comics. You know, they simply didn't. But it wasn't the publishers. I mean, the publishers just wanted to, if it was good and if it would sell, they would publish it. So I didn't have any trouble getting published by the comic book publishers. Excuse me. And also the underground newspapers. And in San Francisco at that point, there were at least three underground newspapers and one in Berkeley. And when they heard I was in town, they phoned me and asked me to come work for them and contribute. So people did want me. It was only the guys who didn't want me. And then I saw my first copy of It Ain't Me, Babe, which was the first feminist, well, in those days we called it women's liberation, right? The first women's liberation newspaper in the country. And I didn't learn that until much later. I thought it was the first on the West Coast, but it turns out it was actually the first in America, which is really cool. And I immediately phoned them, and I said, I want to work with you. And we all met up at a B-in in Golden Gate Park. Isn't that just wonderfully 70s? And after that, I was drawing for them. I was drawing comics on the back page, and I was drawing the front page, and just little bits and pieces in between. And working with them, I finally got brave enough because I had their moral support. I thought, well, I can do a comic book. So I put together an entire all-woman comic book called It Ain't Me, Babe Comics. And that was the first, you know, it was not just me. I mean, there were other women in it, obviously, but I produced it. I edited it and produced it. And it was the first, the very, very, very first
all-woman comic book in the world.
Wow. Is it still cool. in print? Could we find
that? Oh, my God, of course. Haven't you seen the women's comics collection? They reprinted all of the women's comics a two-volume box set. More than an anthology. It's actually, they reprinted every single comic. They didn't just pick the best.
Wow.
You haven't seen that? How could you not have seen that?
I don't get out much.
Well, you can find it on Amazon. It's expensive, but of course on Amazon it's cheaper. It weighs a ton, and I think they charge by the pound, which is why it's so expensive. But anyway, that also includes It Ain't Me, Babe, which is the very first all-woman comic. And I stress that it was the very first because idiot people have interviewed me, and they were like hedging their bets. And when they write the interview, they say she produced one of the first. Well, it wasn't one of the first. It was the first.
With the emphasis on the first.
Yeah, so it should have been one of the first to draw Wonder Woman, the first to produce the comic.
Thank you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's great. It's like just listening to you talk, my follow-up question was going to be sort of how did you work through sort of the boys not accepting you, and it sounds like you just did what you should and you just kept working. Like you just kept working,
of course,
and delivering the work, and the work spoke for itself. And I think that is one of the most inspirational things for me, that like,
well, they wanted me to give up, so of course I wasn't going to give up.
Yeah. And that's how it should be. It shouldn't even be a question of, well, yeah, of course I'm going to keep working because this is what I want to do and this is what I'm good at.
Well, even more because they wanted me to not do it.
Right.
That was really my push.
So there's also a little bit of an F you.
Is this book called The Complete Women's Comics?
That's what it's called.
I found it.
Hooray.
Awesome. Our reading list is growing.
I know.
And that is awesome.
It got an Eisner. It got an Eisner Award in San Diego this summer, this past summer.
Oh, that's read amazing. That actually somewhere.
You know, the Eisners are the Oscars of the comic world.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And actually, that reminds me of another follow-up question that was submitted to me by my art teacher, her students. This was from her because she is a teacher. Good. She was wondering kind of what the best advice is that you could give, especially to young girls who want to pursue a career either just in the arts in general or in comics. What would you tell the new generation, the next generation, especially of young girls? What should they be doing?
Well, you know, to start with, you have to have been drawing comics, or at least drawing. You have to have been drawing since you were a kid. You can't, like, have never drawn and suddenly say, I want to be a cartoonist, because all the schools you go to are not going to teach you how to draw. You have to know that. They can help you improve, but you have to know how to draw. You have to always have done that.
Right. So they should be taking their class seriously right now in middle school.
Yes.
I will tell them.
Good advice.
That this should be required listening for them.
Yes. Okay. So start young, and then what do you do from there?
It's good to know other people who draw comics and see what they're doing. You know, don't aim for, like, you know, to be as great as the greatest superhero artist or something. You know, if that is what you want to do, that'll come later. But don't try for that. Just try expressing yourself. Try sharing, seeing what other people your age or at least around your age range, see what they're doing. You know, at a certain point, you might want to just do a sample comic, a small one, a mini comic, and print it up and take it to the right kind of conventions.
Yeah.
And find other people who are doing comics like that and trade, you know, and just hang out and talk, you know, share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I love that idea of, like, just collaborating and being all inclusive, seeking out advice from other people and feedback, and not necessarily, just like you're saying, not necessarily thinking that you're going to you know, be the best, you need to baby steps, sort of. You need to walk a little bit before you can be running.
Right. And I mean, you know, I mean, there are always, you know, I mean, I feel that way. I look at, I'm a writer now, and I look at all the great, really great writers. And it's like, well, you know, I can never be as great as, gee whiz, I don't know, pick a writer. Okay, Margaret Atwood, who I adore. I can never be as great as Margaret Atwood, but I can be the best Trina Robbins.
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh, that's great.
I absolutely love that. Well, just as like, and I think that's something as like a female content creator is something that I sort of love, that like women are naturally collaborators. And I think that's so important for creating anything, art, comics, writing, film, music. Like, I think that's where the best stuff comes from, is from collaboration and sharing. No one person has the best idea. Yes, communicating that, like, as a group, our idea is going to be so much better and our product is going to be so much more interesting than if it's just one person's idea steering the ship the whole time.
And really, that's what comics are about. They're about communication.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, so great. And I love that, just that idea that you can take, you know, like women, like we can get into nature versus nurture, whatever, we don't have to, but are women naturally more communicative? Is it partially also the way that...
Sure.
Right. We're also socialized probably to be more like that. But I think it's often seen as a negative almost. And so just like embracing that and showing it for the positive that it is.
Oh, the part of the brain that deals with communication is much larger in women than in men. Absolutely.
And so I think, you know, there's like this idea that that's not something that, that should, needs to be valued. And that's just absolutely false. And so sort of taking that back and being, and highlighting it as a strength, I think is really powerful.
Well, what women do has never been valued by men, of course.
Right.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth?
Yes, ain't it the truth? But yeah, change is happening. Hopefully, well, one step forward, 50 years backwards. But we'll, like,
but you know, so long as then you go 51 steps forward the next time, we'll get there.
Right.
Yes.
Trina, before you go, I want to just make sure that you tell us all about Babes in Arms. So since we're going to be giving it away to one lucky listener.
Yes, yes. I'm very, very happy with the job that Hermes Press did on it. They are such a good publisher. They publish beautiful art books. Well, what happened? I mean, something that most of us know is that during the war, when I say the war, I think everyone knows, I mean World War II, right? was there another war? During World War II, as most people know, the guys went off to fight, and the women took their places in the factories and, you know, driving buses, driving trucks, things they'd never done before, making, you know, working, making ships. You know, Rosie the Riveter making planes. Well, in every industry, it happened in every industry, and it happened in comics. The guys who were drawing comics went off to fight. And suddenly, the comic books were hiring women. They needed someone to draw comics. And they were hiring more women than ever before were drawing comics in comic books. Women had always drawn newspaper strips. That was nothing new. The earliest newspaper strip I have found by a woman dates from 1896. But in comic books, it had just been a boy's field. And yet suddenly, all these women were drawing comics for comic books. And what they drew, I think, you know, intelligent editors immediately saw what they were good at and gave them scripts which featured, which starred beautiful, courageous women fighting the Axis, and women who, you know, could take care of themselves, who didn't need to be rescued by some guy. And this book collects the work specifically of four women who I think are the four best of all the women who drew comics, or at least the most prolific. Best and prolific. Anyway, collects the work of these four women and tells about the women and just, you know, the lovely stuff. Now, the stories are a little silly because it's the 40s. If you read any comics from the 40s, they're going to be silly. You know what I mean? Yeah. But the art is lovely, and the stories are actually fun. They're fun once you realize, yes, of course they're silly. It's the 40s.
Yeah. Right. They got their blouses ripped, is what you're trying to say? So.
I just love that, though. It just, like, adds this whole other level. You know, it's like we grow up, we hear about Rosie the Riveter, and, like, you don't even think that there's all these other avenues that women entered in terms of the workforce. It's so interesting. Yeah, it's just blows my mind wide open. I can't wait to check this book out.
Yes.
That's my favorite era of history is World War II.
Me too.
It. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we'll figure out a way to do the giveaway here for the autographed copy. And sure, Amanda, if you want to enter, you can too.
I just might. Listeners, it's on.
Excuse me, but I will again put the link in the show notes last week too, but I will put it in the notes again. I know I keep saying that. Just look for all the links. I've actually been writing them down, so they're going to go in there.
Great.
But thank you so much for talking to us. This has been so much fun and just a really great experience. So thank you so much.
Thank you for taking the time.
You must let me know. I love feedback. Let me know once you read Last Girl Standing how you liked it.
Yes, we definitely will.
Yes, absolutely.
And anybody out there, that's a challenge to you too. So if you want to...
Oh, yes. Feedback.
Yes. Right in and
I have a feeling that we will talk about it on a future episode once everyone has read it.
And you will send me the link, of course.
Of course.
Yes. Definitely. And we'll send you the link to this one too.
Oh yeah, good. Great. Yeah.
So it probably will be out.
Okay.
A little later this week. So look for Last Girl Standing September 12th. It's going to be out. You can pre-order it. You can order on Amazon or pre-order it, I guess, on Amazon as well. And I'm sure it's bookstores too, Barnes & Noble. I'll do some
research. I hope. Is there still a Barnes & Noble?
Yes, it's Borders. I always call it Borders, but it's Barnes & Noble.
Yep, Barnes & Noble is still around. I go to the one in Union Square all the time.
Yeah,
it's really depressing how the bookstores have been closing like mad.
I know. And Trina, if you're at Comic-Con next year, I hope that I can find you.
Of course I'll be at Comic-Con.
Woohoo! That'll be my 11th Comic-Con, I think, 12th. I've been going since 2007. So
I've been going since 1977.
You win.
Ladies, it's not a competition. We're sisters here.
I think you've been getting awards at Comic-Con since before then, too. Okay, it says Robbins was a special guest of the 1977 San Diego Comic-Con when she was presented with an Inkpot Award. So that is something true on Wikipedia.
Yes, it's true.
And then you won another award in 89 for your work on Strip AIDS USA.
Yes, that was an AIDS benefit book. I'm very proud of that book. I worked on that book. I co-edited it with Robert Tripto, who was the editor of Gay Comics, and Bill Sienkiewicz, who I'm sure you've heard of. And the three of us, Bill got the mainstream artists, and Robert got the gay artists, and I found the underground artists and the women. And between the three of us, we produced an award-winning book that made lots of money for AIDS-related causes.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's incredible.
Woo! We got the best guest around, guys.
Yes, we did. Oh, thank you so much. It's been very inspiring to talk to you.
Yes, I think the hashtag for this episode is going to have to be a hashtag I'm with Trina.
Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thank you again so much, and I'll let you know when you can listen to this.
Yes, please do. And it's been my pleasure because I love to talk.
Yes, yeah, so do we. And we hope that we can talk to you again in the future. So,
okay.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you so much, Trina.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.
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 All right. So there you have it, guys. Again, hope you liked it as much as we did. If you have any feedback about any of the things that she talked about, or have read any of the stuff that she's been involved with, or you read Last Girl Standing, anything at all, give us a call at 331-276-2373, or probably easier, send us an email at thebroadcasters3@gmail.com. And if you're listening to this because you found us because you're a fan of Trina, I hope you check out some of our other episodes. They're not safe for work, but we have a good time. And if you're into glitter in the nether regions, we've got some education for you.
Though I just had a thought while you were being all funny and witty. Mm. I think maybe Last Girl Standing should be our first broadcast book club read.
Yes. Mm. Well, maybe second, because we did The Handmaid's Tale, right?
That's right, true. But we didn't really call it, like, it was kind of a test run.
It was an unofficial book club.
It was an unofficial. Okay. Okay. We'll call it the pilot. We can call this episode one.
I mean, when you guys
tell show, you can go back and do that too.
Yes. And whoever's going to write the Wikipedia page for this, just like, please note these caveats of what's right. First and what's second and how we're defining.
The big takeaway that I learned today, that Wikipedia apparently not a reliable source.
Turns out.
Turns out
all of our college professors were right. Good times. But anyway, guys, thanks so much again for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. We can't wait to hear what you thought about the episode. Hashtag I'm with hers. I'm Colleen.
Patrons.
Oh, patrons!
Patrons.
Oh yeah, that's right. Special thank you to our patrons, all of the patrons. If you'd like to become a patron, you can do so by going to jandjack.com and clicking click on the link up top that says become a patron, or you can go to patreon.com/jandjack and check out the different levels that you can help support everybody on the network for. That way. And a very big special thank you to Molly the Millennial, Tack from Tokyo, Ed the Creepy Mailman, and Eckhart. So thanks again. Now goodbye. I'm Colleen. Did I leave anybody else out? Oh, Amazon. If you want to buy any of these books of Trina's, go to jandjack.com/Amazon, all lowercase letters. And you can help support us as well, while also supporting
doing Trina. Yourself the favor and giving yourself the gift of these awesome books.
Yes, that what Amanda said. All right,
now
guys.
you can introduce yourself. Outro yourself.
Outroduce myself.
Outroduce yourself. Nailed it.
I like it.
Okay. I'm Colleen.
I would be Amanda.
And I'm Shani, and I've finished my chips for now.
Oh, thank goodness.
Oh, good.
All right, bye. Peace.
Bye.
Bye.